Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. Welcome to Prime Time. The season begins tonight, so let's kick it off. With the first pick.
Hey there, everybody. This is Dan Kidd, RSB Nation's NFL draft editor. I hope you're having a good day, because on today's show, we'll be joined, of course, shortly here by Matthew Fairburn of Syracuse.com. We're going to be talking pro days, some of the more under-the-radar pro days, some of the more notable pro days, some of the stuff you need to know out of pro day season. It's great fun. We're also going to be going over some of the free agency moves, the second wave of free agency, and how that is impacting the draft. And we're also going to take a look at edge pass rushers tonight, because that's what we do. We're going to talk about the best edge guys in the draft, what makes them good, how highly should they go, is this the best group we've seen in quite some time, all that fun stuff on tonight's show. And we're going to go over a couple of news items and decide, are they really that newsworthy or are they not? It's going to be a packed show. And we'll also touch on a few other things. There's some interesting rumors going around right now. There's the Chris Borland retirement. We might touch on that if we find some time. And we'll see what else we get into here. Hopefully Fairburn will be joining us here shortly. Otherwise, you're going to hear my beautiful dulcet tones rambling on about the NFL draft. There he is now. Matthew Fairburn, how are you, my friend?
Not too bad. Had a little bit of a delay with the Skype machine, but we're here. We made it, and so far smoother than usual to start.
That's right. This is our hottest takeoff yet since we've been back here. But I want to start out with pro days. Now, dear listener, here's what happened. Fairburn and I were doing our extensive show planning earlier today, and we thought it would be kind of fun to kind of blindly look at pro days and pick out a couple that were of interest to us and then kind of present them on the show and see how we each react to those pro days. So, Fairburn, you've looked over the schedule, you've looked over the results, you've looked over who's seeing who. What pro days are standing out to you?
Well, I guess the first guy that's kind of picking back up some buzz that I'll throw out there for us is Baylor quarterback Bryce Petty. And reportedly had a workout with Rex Ryan in Waco last week. Baylor's pro day was this week. Mike Mayock has been kind of beating the Bryce Petty drum all along. It seems like some of these, he seems to be getting put into that third quarterback mold a little bit as people are looking to find that third quarterback. And I'm just curious if he's picked up any more steam for you in this postseason draft process as opposed to when you watched him, actually play games.
No, here's the thing. And the other person who's high on Bryce Petty is Gil Brandt, also of NFL Media Network.com, whatever. Again, excuse my clock there, but
it's been a great addition to the show.
It has. It's our third host. But Gil, Grandpa Gil, is also a Bryce Petty fan, and he actually tweeted out a thing about Rex Ryan working Bryce Petty out, and
oddly enough, he deleted it.
Right, that's what I was just going to say. He then deleted the tweet, which is kind of strange. It Gil's never really wrong with news stuff. I mean, he can be wrong about his opinion, just like we all can. But his news, when he fires something out newsworthy, it's pretty reliable. So I wonder what's going on there. It's kind of interesting. Maybe I'll try and reach out to Gil and see what's going on. And no, my opinion of Bryce Petty has not really changed. I mean, I think he had 5 incomplete passes during his pro day. 4 were dropped. George Whitfield was chasing him around with a broom. I mean, it's the same thing every year with these quarterback prospects. So, no, but I mean, I kind of wanted to bring him up too. That's the first one that kind of stuck out to me, mostly because of what we were just talking about with Gil. So I thought that was interesting. And then there was a little tidbit on the write-up for his pro day that he still had some issues on his deep throws. Like, those were the ones that the wide receivers had to wait a little bit for. And that's kind of like, it kind of affirms my opinion on him, you know?
Yeah, I mean, Bryce Petty's is a guy that's really, you know, been generating more buzz than I ever thought he would, just watching him. And I get that he is, as Mike Mayock so eloquently put it, the best thrower of the football in this class. Whatever that means. As someone pointed out on Twitter, as opposed to Jameis Winston being the best thrower of the baseball among the quarterbacks in this class. But you know, Bryce Petty does have the arm talent. You know, he's got some physical tools. He's a pretty good athlete. And he's sort of that prototype, you know, personality in terms of a leader and all that, which is great. But I think we've talked about him on the show before about, you know, he's going to be 24 years old when his you know, NFL career starts. He's already had a broken back. I believe it's 2 ACL tears and a couple of major concussions. And he's going to be 24 coming from an offense that does not translate well to the pros. He, you know, said down at the Senior Bowl how much of a learning curve he's going to have, how he wants teams to be patient with him, et cetera, et cetera. But he's 24, and I don't know. It's one of those things where even on the field, you look at him and all the throws he was making were to wide-open guys and really not showing a lot of anticipation, not making a lot of reads. And when things broke down, you know, he's pretty bad pocket presence-wise and, you know, not good at resetting and recollecting himself, keeping his eyes downfield. It's just a lot of Blaine Gabbert to him as a prospect, which is just never a good thing, even though Blaine did make it to a second contract. So good on him.
That's right. We don't see you making it to a second contract. Well, actually, that's not true. You know, I don't know. I thought it was neat that I guess some of the old Baylor players showed up to watch his pro day. Like Robert Griffin was there, and Kendall Wright was there, and Terrence Williams was there. So there's that. I mean, I don't know. Looking over the schedule of pro days, by the time people listen to this, if they didn't listen to us live, they'll probably already know the results of this one. But Shane Ray is holding a individual workout on March 19th, which is Thursday. Those are always interesting to me. I mean, he didn't, correct me if I'm wrong, he didn't work out that much at the combine. And I think teams want to see how fluid he is in space and what he can do as a linebacker. And you know, there's already reports that a bunch of teams like the Steelers, the Chiefs, the Jets, Cardinals, Falcons, they all want to meet with this guy and see what he has and have dinner with him and that sort of thing. So that's another one kind of stuck out to me as a notable pro day that hasn't yet happened.
Yeah, I think Shane Ray, especially after not working out at the combine, is somebody that has a lot to prove at, you know, his pro day in terms of he did add some weight. As he was obviously able to weigh in at the combine, but how's he going to carry that weight? And, you know, with all of these metrics that we've talked about with pass rushers on the show recently, it's going to be interesting to see how his numbers fit in a crowded edge class at the top, which we'll get to later in the show. But it's, you know, there's some really good athletes in this pass rusher class, and you know, we'll see where Shane Wright fits in, because, you know, a lot of his game was sort of predicated on getting a good jump off the snap. And so we'll see how much of that was explosiveness, how much was, you know, good snap anticipation. And, you know, I think pro days are reasonably important for a guy. You know, his might be the most important pro day of the entire pre-draft process, considering he was, you know, unable to work out in Indianapolis.
Right. The ones that kind of stick out are of most importance to me in that light are him, Tevin Coleman, the Illinois running back. He's going to have a personal day on April 15th, and Todd Gurley. I'll have to look up and see if he's having a personal day or not, but I think those three are pretty important. I mean, Todd Gurley, you're talking about, is he going to be a first-round pick? And maybe that'll be determined with what he can show before the draft. Tevin Coleman, I mean, frankly, kind of the same way. Because people might have thought you were crazy putting Tevin Coleman in the first round of the mock draft that we did a couple weeks ago. And of course, you can check that out on iTunes, download it, listen to it, rate, subscribe, do the whole thing. But I think there should be a legitimate discussion about him in the first round just because of the great need for running backs in the draft this year. So that's another interesting one. Tevin Coleman, April 15th. Keep an eye out on that. I thought one of the other interesting ones, we're on this, we have this thirst for quarterbacks, right? And at San Diego State's pro day, I can't remember what day it was, but Chris Bonner from Colorado State Pueblo, who you probably didn't even know before the draft process started. I mean, supposedly he looked phenomenal. He's almost 6'7". The stats are he went 56 for 60 passing to a bunch of wide receivers he doesn't know, other than one wide receiver who is from CSU Pueblo, and three running backs dropped passes. So, you know, I kind of like seeing some of these under-the-radar players. Who else is kind of sticking out for you, Fairburn?
Yeah, that's an interesting name that I saw got brought up this week, a guy that I'm going to have to, you know, go back and watch. And you're right in that some of these smaller school guys can really get a chance to shine in that type of environment, and guys that we haven't really heard of, it's one of their last chances to show it. I saw a story, forget which pro day it was from, I believe it popped up on mockingthedraft.com, actually, the story that I saw of scouts cutting off a pro day because guys didn't meet certain requirements on the
board. Yeah.
Pro days or things like that. Crazy stuff. I mean, just goes to show you how much, how tough it is for some of these guys who are kind of off the radar, you know, to stick on an NFL roster and really create buzz, even in this pre-draft process where it seems like there's a lot of, you know, fake buzz going around. It's not as easy as it looks. And, Pro days are an interesting time. I generally don't put too much stock into it, but there are, you know, particular ones like some of the ones we've pointed out that are definitely worth paying attention to.
Yeah, and more than anything, I don't necessarily like looking at the numbers and using them to judge where I should have a player ranked. And for instance, I put together a top 300 top 300 big board, and I'm not going to change it anymore. Like, it's the last one I'm going to do before the draft because I didn't want to get hung up on pro day results and what guys are doing at their pro day. But one of the things I like looking at in pro days is what teams are meeting with what players and what coaches and executives are they sending to what pro days. You know, if there's a specific player at those pro days, what does it mean? Because, like, I think you can kind of pick up a trend of team needs more than player value with what happens at these pro days. For instance, I mentioned before the Steelers are going to meet with Shane Ray during or after his pro day. They're also meeting with Bud Dupree, another pass rusher who we'll get to later when we talk about edge guys, but I think that's interesting that they're kind of stacking up and taking a look at these higher level pass rushers. I think that kind of tells you something about where they might go in the draft. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's interesting to follow the trends in terms of who's going where. You know, there are some coaches and GMs that really like to get out there. Chip Kelly is one of them. Rex Ryan is actually another one who likes to, you know, really be hands-on in some of these workouts. And it's an interesting piece of the puzzle to see how these teams are going about it in terms of their scouting process, and also, like you mentioned, where they view their needs. And, you know, it's also all part of the game. I mean, the Jaguars were at every quarterback's pro day for each of the last 2 years. So, you know, it's part of sort of that mind game you play as a general manager in terms of either trying to throw the scent off what you're actually doing, or, but you also have to do the due diligence on a guy that you do want to pick. So, you know, it's worth paying attention to just to see which teams are kind of tipping their hat in terms of who they might, tipping their hand in terms of who they might, you know, be targeting, or at least a certain position.
Yeah, and you know what's kind of strange? Phillip Rivers, there's this weird talk about his future in San Diego and or Los Angeles if the Chargers move. And the Chargers, coincidentally enough, have been kind of keenly paying attention to quarterbacks during pro days. And, you know, I wonder if that's a coincidence or not. But, you know, that's another fun wrinkle that's part of this time of year. But I don't know about you, but the other pro day stuff that kind of caught my attention, we're not going to go through every single team's pro day. That would be ridiculous and a waste of time. You can find enough information out there online everywhere. But two things that stood out to me. Number one, Marcus Mariota had his pro day on March 12th. You've probably seen highlights of it on NFL Network or wherever else, but according to Tony Pauline on Walter Football, I think, he said Mariota looked poor during his workout, and I'm not sure anybody else had that opinion, so I thought that was kind of humorous, I guess. And the other one, I always like kind of being affirmed about my sleepers, I guess, during pro day, like guys that didn't go to the combine or an all-star game. And like I like Gabe Martin, the linebacker from Bowling Green, which is very random, but he had a really good pro day. Like he ran 4.6 3.40, and he had a 35-inch vertical. And I think the Eagles linebackers coach was there. I don't know. I like seeing those under the radar guys and seeing them perform well and kind of making me, you know, feel good about my high sleeper status on some of these guys. Anything else from pro days stand out for you?
I actually was at a pro day last week.
Look at you, big timer.
Yeah, I was at the Buffalo Pro Day, which was reasonably not noteworthy. but there's a defensive lineman. His last name is, I probably am pronouncing this wrong, but Spokely. And he actually had a pretty good day, ran 4.84 at 200, and he came in at 6'5", 290, ran a 4.84, had a 38-inch vertical and a 7.193 cone, which was, you know, those are pretty good numbers. You know, I think some teams are actually looking at him as a guard, interestingly enough, and he's listed as a defensive tackle at Buffalo, so he was interesting. Like, you know, we're talking about these under-the-radar guys. I figure throw his name out there because he was really the only one of note at Buffalo's pro day. But he did look pretty good, and NFL teams were sniffing around. I think there were six or seven NFL scouts there, Seahawks, Patriots, both among them. So he's a name to watch out for late in the draft.
That's interesting. I don't watch a ton of Buffalo, even though I'm in the heart of Mac territory, but I'm firing through their stats right now, and if he played defense for them last season, he didn't do anything. Oh, Sokoli, is that who it is? S-O-K-O-L-I?
Yeah.
Okay, he had 32 tackles, 3 sacks, and 6 something else, because their website sucks. Sorry, Buffalo, but You need to get your website in order. Six pass breakups. That's kind of interesting. But for the people
long
who, and the numbers were good. But for the people who don't necessarily get on the ground for a pro day, I mean, they show these things on NFL Network now, and they just kind of show quarterbacks throwing more than anything. What are scouts doing at these pro days? What were you observing them do?
You know, a lot of them are kind of setting things up and running the drills. Yeah, I think there is a Bills scout there doing a lot of that. And then you'll see them during the 40-yard dash. You know, some of them are at the 10-yard line trying to get the 10-yard split. Some of them are standing at the end of it because they want to get, you know, their own 40 number for a guy as opposed to taking it from someone else. And which is just it's kind of a bizarre process because, I mean, you would think it wouldn't matter all that much, you know, this exact number on the 40-yard dash, but they want their own number from their guy at the 10-yard and at the 40, so you kind of have to pick your battle, I guess, if you're a scout. But, you know, a lot of them are really, you know, up close and personal. You know, you mentioned some positional coaches that have been at these pro days. A lot of them will get involved in the drills, run the, you know, whether it be the linebacker drills or the O-line drills. So very hands-on process, a chance for them to get up close and personal with these guys.
Yeah, they're good fun. I wouldn't be shocked if at some point in the future, you know, big SEC teams or Big Ten or Pac-12 teams start selling tickets to them. I remember I went to an Akron one, and the way their facility is set up, they have stands off to the side, and a bunch of people came in. I know some of them were family members of the players, but they're just kicking it there at the pro day, watching. I wouldn't be surprised if it became a ticket selling event.
When Blaine Gabbert had his pro day at Mizzou, it was like a huge spectacle on campus because, you know, John Elway was there. And a lot of these GMs and coaches were there, just turned into a big event. And last year was even, you know, pretty big with Michael Sam, you know, working out. So especially some of these bigger schools could definitely, you know, it has become a bit of a spectacle for fans, just like every other part of the pre-draft process.
Yeah, it really has. Is there anything else sticking out to you about pro days, the results, what's going on, who's where? Because quite honestly, you know, we plan to talk pro days, and we've been talking about them for quite a while now, actually, but I'm a little underwhelmed. Like, I'm not as excited about what's been going on at pro days this year, I don't think. Is anything else notable for you?
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way. It's been a bit of a, you know, slow year, and it's probably because there's not massive debate over the quarterback. And honestly, the quarterback throwing sessions are really kind of a useless part of the pro days, but it's what creates all the buzz and arguments and hypes. And, you know, that's what created all the fun last year, you know, with Teddy Bridgewater, Johnny Manziel, Derek Carr, Blake Bortles all having their pro days. It became a big thing, but you're right. This year it's been kind of ho-hum.
It really has. So maybe we'll move on to something moderately more exciting. Who knows? We're into the second week of free agency, and we saw the big moves come off the board in a hurry the first week. I mean, the Ndamukong Suh to the Dolphins, all the stuff the Jets did, getting Darrell Revis and everybody else, every defensive back basically in free agency signed with the Jets. The Jaguars spent a ton of money. But the second week, that's where I like looking at them because, again, I talked earlier about kind of honing in on team needs. I think the second week of free agency can give a good indication of those as well. So, like, it's a ho-hum move when the Giants sign Kenrick Ellis, the Giant defensive tackle. I think he signed, like, a one-year contract. But to me, that kind of... I think that was like a fringe need for the Giants in the draft, and signing a guy like that who's been a backup mostly for the Jets on a great defensive line, to me that kind of mitigates what they might need in the draft. So we're into the second week of free agency. The highlight for me so far has been Kenrick Ellis, I guess. How about you, Fairburn?
The Greg Hardy signing is a pretty big one for the Cowboys. You know, he's obviously got a whole bunch of problems off the field, but on the field he's, you know, one of the best pass rushers in the NFL, and he's sort of right in his prime. Cowboys get him at a reasonable, you know, reasonable cost considering the risk off the field, and that was one of their bigger needs heading into the draft. So, you know, that was sort of the last big chip to fall from free agency. You know, you got the Bills still playing the waiting game on Charles Clay, which I think could affect the draft if they're able to land him. It doesn't totally rule them out of, you know, grabbing a tight end on the second day, you know, with Greg Roman wanting to do multiple things. But, you know, them adding Clay and Percy Harvin kind of opens them up on the, you know, their first pick isn't until number 50. But with some of the weapons they added, you know, on offense and free agency, it kind of opens them up to, you know, really take the best player on the board. So those are a couple of the big chips, I think, that still have to fall that, you know, you look at a week ago where everybody was, and it makes us wonder why we did, you know, mocks before free agency.
Well, we did it so we could do another one post-free agency. There's a grand scheme going on here. I'm just filling time, baby. But no, that does open the Bills to take the best player they see there at 50, and it'll be Bryce Petty. But no, Fairburn's just vomiting right now. But I thought it, you know, the Titans, they signed Brian Arakpo and Derek Morgan on the same day. I thought that was a interesting move. I think they signed them on the same day, but sometime around the same day. But, you know, that kind of eliminates pass rush need for them, high in the draft at least. You mentioned Charles Clay. The Chiefs, they gave Ron Parker a huge contract, and I kind of think that might quiet their need for a safety to a degree. If they play him at safety, I mean, he could be a cornerback for them too, but, you know, they gave him a big contract, so it kind of leads me to believe they're not going to go after that position high in the draft. The Browns signed a couple veterans like Tremont Williams and Randy Starks. Those kind of, you know, the Browns aren't going to take a cornerback now, probably. They got an okay enough player on the defensive line that if the guy doesn't fall to them in the first or second round, they don't have to rush a pick. And I think there's a lot of situations out there like that. And then, of course, you know, the inverse of all of this is, you know, the Houston Texans, for instance, they lost Andre Johnson. So do they go after a wide receiver high in the draft? Or the Saints, they've been wheeling and dealing, and it kind of flies under the radar that they traded Ben Grubbs, a pretty good guard. You know, do they go for an interior blocker high in the draft now? So the pendulum kind of swings both ways, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, teams, I look at the Bills, you know, losing some guys just, you know, as part of the whole process, losing, you know, safety Denoris Searcy, who signed with Tennessee, another kind of under-the-radar signing. But, you know, does that open things up for them to grab a safety and maybe make that a need? And you're right, it kind of shuffles the needs all over the place, because now we're talking about, you know, still talking about tight ends late in the first round, but now we might be talking about, you know, the Saints looking that direction instead of the Seahawks. And, you know, it all does kind of go both ways. And free agency gives a little bit of clarity to the whole mock draft picture, but I'm sure in a few weeks we'll be scratching our heads just as much as we were, you know, before all these signings.
Yeah, for sure. And we've talked about the Saints a little bit. I think we talked about them last week, actually. And I'll be honest with you, I kind of like what they're doing. I mean, it's kind of crazy, like a rabies-infested animal, but I don't know. I kind of like what the Saints are doing. They got Brandon Browner, who should start for them. And if anything, Stanley Jean-Baptiste, who they took in the second round last year, should be able to just watch Brandon Browner play and figure out how to be a cornerback. They signed C.J. Spiller, which is, I think, a solid move. They got Max Unger in the trade back from Seattle, which they also got a first round pick for Jimmy Graham. They traded for Danelle Ellerbe, which is kind of eh, but I don't know. You never know if guy's going to kickstart his career. They re-signed Mark Ingram. I know there's some complaints they traded Kenny Stills. I've never really thought of Kenny Stills as a big threatening wide receiver. Ben Grubbs is okay. I don't know. I kind of like what the Saints are doing. What do you think? I mean, are they crazy? Am I crazy? What do you think of the Saints?
They didn't really have a choice. They had to kind of shake things up somehow, given the salary cap situation they were in. You know, obviously they didn't have to trade Jimmy Graham. They could have gone about it a different way, but I think given the situation they were in, it's been kind of impressive how they've come out of it. And you mentioned C.J. Spiller. He's, you know, a guy who all along, you know, the Bills didn't really expect to have back because of, you know, how highly he valued himself compared to, you know, really his market value. And I think he really went to the perfect spot. You know, I don't think he could have picked a better team just because you imagine him in that Darren Sproles role, you know, out in space, catching passes out of the backfield. And, you know, sorry, I got fighting a bit of a cold here. But you imagine Darren Sproles or C.J. Spiller in that Darren Sproles role, and he could do some dangerous things. And I think they've kept some pieces on offense that will allow them to be competitive. And, you know, they're, you know, putting a little less strain on themselves salary cap wise.
They are. So I've quietly been impressed with the Saints, and I think what they're doing is more toward 2016 than the next season, to be honest. I don't know. I've been impressed with what they've done. I think the Chiefs have really gone a good direction. I mean, they got Jeremy Maclin. They got Grubbs, like I said. They lost Rodney Hudson, which is a blow at center, but you know, they signed Tavon Branch. Like I said, they re-signed Ron Parker. I kind of like what the Chiefs are doing. I mentioned the Titans. I think they're doing some okay stuff, which is kind of strange to say. I don't know. I'm probably overly optimistic about free agency, I guess, is where I'm going with all of this. So maybe we should move on to our topic du jour of the night of edge pass rushers, one of the most important positions in the NFL, wouldn't you say? Let's start there. Rank the most important positions in the NFL, because for me it is quarterback, left tackle, pass rusher, cornerback. Do you have them in a different order?
I would say it's quarterback, pass rusher, offensive tackle, and yeah, probably corner is next. And you know, then you can argue about the fifth. Argue with your cat about it. Doesn't really matter. Those first four are the most important. But I think you need a quarterback, and then you need somebody to hit the other team's quarterback. I mean, you know, if you have a good quarterback, can mask the offensive line, which you know makes me flip those.
Yeah. Understandable. Now, the best pass rushers, I think, in this year's draft are pretty obvious. Randy Gregory of Nebraska, Dante Fowler of Florida, Bud Dupree of Kentucky, Vic Beasley of Clemson. I think those kind of, to me, that's the first tier of pass rushers. Am I incorrect about that? And out of those four, who's the best one?
He said Beasley, Dupree, Fowler, and Gregory.
Yep.
I'm having a hard time with Randy Gregory, honestly, and wondering whether he is a part of that group or if he's the start of the next group.
Hmm.
But and I don't know, it's one of those weird things because, you know, I was just underwhelmed watching him a bit, and then you know, his weight is a bit of a concern. I think, you know, you got to have some questions about a guy who can't put on weight, can't keep on the weight, at least, and especially at that position, you know, if he's going to have his hand in the dirt in the NFL, he's going to need to play a bit heavier than he's been listed at. But, yeah, I think it's fair to throw him in there because he is a pretty special athlete. You know, the length is obviously very appealing. But of those four, it's tough. I think you can make a case for any one of them other than Gregory, in my opinion. But I think, you know, Vic Beasley is a really special athlete. All those guys really showed some special things in Indianapolis. They were all pretty productive. I think, you know, Bud Dupree battled some injuries this year. And, you know, you probably have some questions about Dante Fowler's athleticism compared to the other two. But to me, it comes down to Fowler and Dupree, and it's a more of a philosophical question because I think Dupree's more advanced as a pass rusher, whereas Dupree's the flashier athlete. But Fowler's my top pass rusher in this class, and mostly because I think he's a little bit more versatile and, you know, probably more ready to contribute on day one.
See, I like Gregory the most of them all, and I think sometimes I can be a victim to a player having size, and you've poked fun at me for liking Zach Mettenberger for that very specific reason, but I still like him just because maybe I buy into upside and size too much, but I just see a guy that with that length and that first step, and I just assume that he'll be able to get stronger in the NFL. Like, I don't think he's at his power ceiling right now, and that's not a technical term either. I didn't learn that at the Arnold Schwarzenegger Invitational or whatever, but I don't know. I guess I'm buying into his upside potential and making him the top pass rusher in this year's draft. Now, if I'm thinking the best overall player of those four guys, and I think that is a distinct tier there with those four. I think Fowler is probably the most well-rounded of those guys. I think he's really good against the run, whereas Gregory is not. I think Dupree is okay, but he can get stuck on blocks. And Vic Beasley, I think, gets stuck on blocks quite a bit too. So that's kind of the second thing I look at for an end. I always like their first step, and then I like to see how they get off blocks. And I think Fowler does that better, and that helps him in the run game. So if I'm ranking them, and I hope I have this right, otherwise I'm going to sound like a real idiot, I think my rankings are Gregory, Fowler, Beasley, Dupree, and they're all in the top 15. So that to me is the first tier. Now the second tier of these guys, I would say, and if there's anything from the first tier you want to keep going on with Fairburn, go ahead. But I think the second tier is kind of Shane Ray from Mizzou, Eli Harold from Virginia, Preston Smith, who's a different kind of player, from Mississippi State. Anybody else should be in that second tier?
No, I think those are about right. I might like Preston Smith the most of the bunch. It's tough. I mean, we've talked about Shane Ray before. You know, obviously an extremely productive player and one of the best conferences in college football, but when it comes to translating his first step into power on contact and getting off blocks, I mean, you need more than just a strong first step and good, you know, speed around the edge to win as a pass rusher in the NFL. And like you mentioned, you want a guy who can get off blocks, you know, use his hands and show a variety of pass rush moves, a variety of different ways to get to the quarterback, because quite frankly, it's harder to beat the offensive tackles to the edge in the NFL. So, you know, you need to have some different ways of converting that speed to power. And I have, you know, some pretty significant questions about that with Ray. And that's why, you know, I prefer a guy like Preston Smith, who's got good technique and, you know, can, you know, get after it on the interior a bit, has really strong hands and, you know, stands out to me in that way more than Ray.
I think he does, too. two. I still have Ray ranked higher. I have Ray as the 25th best prospect in the draft, and at some point I'll have these rankings up on the site sbnation.com/NFL-draft, and we're trying to figure out if we can do something fun with them. That's why they're not up there yet, but I guess this is a nice sneak peek for you. But I have Ray as the 25th best player in the draft, Smith as the 35th best player, and who is the other guy I mentioned? Eli Harold. I have him at 56. And I actually have a guy ahead of him, and it's you consider an edge guy. And I have Marcus Golden at 50. I think I like Marcus Golden a lot better than everybody else. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Marcus Golden, to be honest. I think I've got on record on this podcast saying that I think he'll be a better NFL player than Shane Ray. Just, you know, a bit of a hot take, but whatever. Yeah, I think he's just an extremely high motor player, a guy that you're going to, you know, love having in your locker room, love having in the huddle, and he's, you know, just a pain to block. And, you know, people worry about his size, but it didn't hurt him, you know, much in college. And I think he, you know, with his technique, you know, showed that he can really get off blocks and finish plays. I don't know. It's not a guy I want to bet against.
Yeah, I think that's well said. And going back on Preston Smith a little bit, I think he's going to be an attractive player in this year's draft just because he might not be that speed end, but he does everything else really well. And to me, I mean, everybody's been fishing for the Michael Bennett comparison. Who's the next Michael Bennett? I think he should be at the top of that list of players. So another guy that's kind of like that to a degree is Trey Flowers, the defensive end from Arkansas. I think he's in the third tier, if we want to keep going with this tier system I'm making up on the fly here. I think that third tier is kind of, I have Lorenzo Malden from Louisville in there. I'm not sure if he's going to be an outside linebacker or an end in the NFL. I have Flowers in there, and I have Danelle Hunter from LSU in there. Any thoughts on those three guys?
Yeah, of those guys, I like Danelle Hunter. You know, he's got good length, and his it's weird watching defensive ends come out of LSU a couple years ago with Sam Montgomery and Barkevious Mingo. The system they play makes it tough to, you know, evaluate them a lot of the times because, you know, they play a lot of contain and but I do like his skill set, his size, his length. And I think he's got a decent chance to develop into a pretty good player. A name I'll throw out there, we're getting into a territory of some of these guys I've watched, some of them I haven't. I don't know if this guy's popped up on your defensive end watching at all, but it's Obum Gwachum from Oregon State. Kind of a built like a Leo. You know, he's got a ton of upside, I think. You know, just a really explosive player off the edge, and definitely has, you know, the size and length that you're looking for in a pass rusher. I mean, he's probably in the conversation with a guy like Danelle Hunter, and you know, yeah, he's a bit raw, but you know, with the motor and the strength at his size, I think he's a name to watch out for in this edge rusher group.
Yeah, I have him rated quite low, only because I think he's such a project. But I'm aware of the name because, quite frankly, Fairburn, I'm pretty sure I popularized Obum Gwachum in the draft community. If I say so myself, I think I did because before the combine, I was tasked with finding some breakout players, you know, and he was one of them. I wrote it on February 13th, and you can look up in the records how many people were talking about Obum Gwachum before February 13th. So that's right, listener. I'm an Obum Gwachum firster. Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow. Look at you.
That's right. That's right. Boom.
I didn't even realize that. I thought I was first in it on him. And Great minds. Yeah, we're just still on the same wavelength here on the Mocking the Draft podcast.
That's right. Now, here's a couple interesting facts about him. I fired up my story. Get them page views, baby. And here's what I wrote about him. In high school, he was one of the best high jumpers, long jumpers, and triple jumpers in the state of California. Now, that's kind of dumb. It doesn't really translate to the NFL, you probably say, but it kind of illustrates his explosiveness. I mean, that's what this guy's all about. You know, In February, I wrote that I think he's probably a UDFA, an undrafted free agent. I don't know why I said UDFA there, but I don't know. I just think the technical term. That's right. I just think his developmental potential is so high. Maybe a team will pick him, probably because I wrote about him too. But I think that was a good one. That's a good guy to pull out there.
Yeah, he's interesting. You know, at that point in the draft, why not go after a guy that's got, you know, physical ability that, had he been able to put it together a bit more, would have gotten him drafted a lot higher. So that's what you're looking for at that spot, is a really good, you know, athlete and an explosive player off the edge. So I don't know. I thought he was interesting. I think he'll be a, you know, guy to keep an eye on day three if he makes it that far. I assume he will make it that far, but you never know.
Yeah.
You know, maybe he's real popular.
I
maybe your article will skyrocket him right on to day two.
Well, it apparently didn't help him enough for me because I have him as the 265th best player in the draft this year. So, you know, whatever. Thanks. Yeah, well, we'll see what happens. Some other pass rushers to note, I guess. Corey Crawford from Clemson, I think, is a solid player. Not a big speed guy, but kind of like a poor man's Preston Smith, a poor man's Trey Flowers. Then you have Corey Crawford at that point. But he's a solid player. But, I mean, I'm not trying to crap on the guy, but you know, he's a solid early day three pick, I think. What other kind of pass rushers are out there this year? You know, you mentioned Danielle Hunter, and I'm not man enough to say what exactly separates Danielle Hunter and Randy Gregory in a public forum, even though I just kind of said that on the show. But, you know, you look at those two and throw in Shaq Riddick from West Virginia, and they're all these lanky, quick first-step pass rushers. And what separates those guys? And to me, Gregory's just more consistent than those two is what does it for me. And I think he's just the overall better player, period, just in every area, really. But Shaq Riddick's another guy. You know, he could be a good fourth, fifth, sixth round pick that you develop. He's in that vein. Someone like Tony Washington from Oregon, he's in that vein. Probably a solid 3-4 outside linebacker, backup linebacker type of player. Yeah, I don't know. Any other pass rushers off the top of your head that kind of you like, are intrigued by?
How about hashtag our guy, Za'Darius Smith from Kentucky? Kind of fell off a bit this year, but, you know, I still like his skill set. 6'6", 260-something. I mean, he was a bit of a monster at times in 2013 and fell off a bit. But, you know, it was a bit overshadowed by Bud Dupree. But I still believe in his potential and in the right, you know, scheme and in the right spot. I think he could make some noise. He's a guy I'll probably, you know, still be banging the drum for up until draft time. And I'm trying to pull out a couple other names from my notes here. Christian Covington is the kid from Rice, right?
Correct.
He's more of a tackle, though.
Yeah, 3-4 end kind of guy.
Yeah, it depends what we're talking. If we're talking edge rushers, I guess he doesn't fit the mold. But yeah, I think it's a, you say probably the best class we've had since what, 2011?
Yeah, I mean, nothing's ever going to compare to the 2011 class, obviously. But you know, I think this is the best position in the draft this year, and obviously it's a position that kind of encapsulates outside linebackers, 4-3 ends, in the case of Covington, 3-4 ends to a degree. So it's kind of a painting with a broad brush to say that, but I think it's the best position in the draft this year.
Yeah, for sure. I think we'll see a lot of them fly off the board early. Maybe two in the first three picks. You'll probably have Leonard Williams in there, though, so maybe not, especially after the Titans address their pass rush. But I do think, number three is the first spot to look for one of these guys to come off the board. Jaguars still have a pretty glaring need there. And a lot of these guys fit, which is, an exciting time for Jacksonville, I guess. And any team that really needs a pass rusher, it's a good group. One that, worth getting excited about.
And that kind of transitions us. Two of the first three picks could be defensive linemen, edge rushers, whatever. That transitions us to the news part of the show. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, who does a really good job covering the NFL for them. He has a source in the NFL, just like everybody does, but they broke it down this way, the top eight picks in the draft. Number one, Buccaneers quarterback. Two, Titans defensive line. Three, Jaguars defensive line. Four, Raiders wide receiver. Five, Washington defensive line / pass rusher or wide receiver. Jets at six, quarterback. Bears at seven, wide receiver. Eight, Falcons defensive line, which I assume would be a pass rusher. But I think Charles is usually a pretty reliable news giver. Out of those eight picks and positions, which do you think is the kind of most unlikely, or which one really stands out for you?
I think it's tough to imagine the Jets getting the quarterback, I guess. Mariota would have to fall, and I don't know that he's going to be there. So I guess that's the hardest one to believe, but I mean, these all make sense if you just run down the list. Buccaneers, going after Jameis Winston. Titans, Leonard Williams. Jaguars, any one of these pass rushers we talked about. Raiders will have their pick of the receivers. Redskins can have, the second best pass rusher on the board. If he's there, Mariota makes sense for the Jets. Bears lost Brandon Marshall. So, Amari Cooper or Kevin White, whichever one the Raiders don't pick. And then same thing with the Falcons. We broke down these pass rushers. I think at least three of them are worth top 10 picks. And whatever one's there for the Falcons makes a lot of sense for Dan Quinn and that defense. So this isn't a totally far-fetched outlook at it, but I do wonder, this isn't a perfect world in a vacuum where teams aren't trading. I wonder if the Jets are going to be able to sit there and get Mariota at six.
Yeah, that's the rub when you look at situations like that is, there isn't a trade there. And that takes us to our second bit of news, actually. And I apologize, Fairburn, if I didn't prep you on this news, but it's pretty obvious now that it's happened. There have been reports that the Cleveland Browns offered the number 19 pick to not only the Rams, but then the Eagles for Sam Bradford. Now, knowing that piece of information, and enough people have run with it, that I think it's pretty credible, and Charlie Cassardly supposedly just up and said it on NFL Network recently that it was the Browns offering at the 19th pick for Sam Bradford. Knowing that, and knowing that the Browns have two picks in the top 20 this year, do you feel stronger about them making a move for a player like Mariota?
Yeah, I think that would make me feel a bit stronger about it. It's I don't know what the Browns are doing, but
no one does.
I also don't know what's up with Sam Bradford. I mean, the Eagles are confusing, the Browns are confusing, and Sam Bradford's confusing. To me, I guess the Rams, want a quarterback they can plug in right away, which is what made the Eagles trade appealing. But man, if I had Sam Bradford, I'd be pretty tempted to take the number 19 pick for him. I think that's almost the more interesting debate is, what is the price tag on Sam Bradford and would Chip Kelly be willing to move him? I think Chip Kelly's, would trade me for the right price if he could. he's basically been trading nonstop since he, got power. But Yeah, I think the Browns are going to be aggressive for quarterback because right now I think it's safe to assume that they don't have their long-term starter on the roster. You know, they spent a first-round pick on Johnny Manziel last year, but, you know, he's since entered rehab. And it's interesting that everybody's willing to – I mean, the off-the-field stuff is one thing. He had a pretty disastrous year off the field, you know, from all the reports. But it's interesting that one game really has people thinking they were, you know, throwing out scouting reports, lighting everything on fire and saying, this guy's awful. I don't know what I was thinking. I still have some faith in him as a football player. Question is, can Johnny Manziel, the person, figure it out? And, you know, that's not really up for me to decide. But I do think it's kind of interesting, and I do think that the Browns are, you know, a little fed up with it and would probably, you know, I think that's, you know, trying to trade for one of your first-round picks for Sam Bradford is evidence that you'll do just about anything.
Yeah, I think the offering a first-round pick for Sam Bradford to two different teams is one of the strangest, most bizarre things so far this offseason. Like, who the hell is Sam Bradford? I mean, at this point in his career, he hasn't had a good season. I mean, he's had some okay to decent seasons, but never one where you're like, oh man, Sam Bradford, what a year. And do you give up a first round pick for that guy who has continual ACL problems? And like Sam Bradford said something along the lines of, he was talking about being injury prone, and he said something like, no, I'm not injury prone. The stuff I've got injured on was just kind of like a freak play. It was nothing my fault. And that's me paraphrasing it hardcore, but that's like the definition of being injury prone. Like when it just happens like randomly, I don't know. But to me, the overlying theme here is that the Browns are offering a first round pick for an average quarterback with knee issues. That tells me that they don't like what they have. And to me, that kind of tells me that don't be shocked if the Browns make a play for Marcus Mariota is what it tells me. So I don't know. They still have the best ammunition of anybody in the league right now to make that move, too. I mean, two first-round picks in the current draft is stronger than a first-round pick this year and a first-round pick next year, no matter how high you think that pick is going to be next year. You just don't know. So that makes 12 and 19 stronger than anything else anybody could trade. So I don't know. I think that's a strong piece of news as we head toward the draft.
Yeah, and it really speaks to the 2015 off-season market at quarterback, really, because if you're not the Tampa Bay Buccaneers or, you know, the New York Jets or a team like the Browns that has the ammunition to get up for a guy like Mariota, you know, there's not really another rookie that is going to impact the game right away. I do like Brett Hundley quite a bit, but you're getting a bit of a project there. Bryce Petty, I mean, people keep trying to make that happen. We've talked about why he's not that great. That would be a pretty typical Browns pick at 19. But I'm not going to throw that. I'm not going to wish that on you. But yeah.
You know what's going to happen?
They're going to do something stupid.
No, you know what's going to happen? Buffalo is going to take Bryce Petty at 50. I'm going to send Bryce Petty tapes of all of our shows up to this point.
And all the articles I wrote about why they shouldn't pick him.
That's right.
Kind of a fear of mine.
He's your 2015 DJ Fluker.
Yeah, except I've never had to face DJ Fluker, you know, face to face. But and that would be a daily thing if this happens with Petty. But the quarterback market this offseason is pretty bad. I mean, I'm just kind of now putting together like if the Bills actually do draft Bryce Petty. This is a really tough year to find a quarterback, and I think if you're a team that has the ammunition to do it, you got to go after a guy like Mariota or Winston. I mean, that's how you get quarterbacks in this league. A lot of people are saying, oh, look at the 2016 free agent crop at quarterbacks. Like, it's going to be a real doozy. And it's like, if any of those quarterbacks are worth, you know, anything, their teams are keeping them. I mean, when was the last time a major quarterback hit free agency? As in, like, his contract expired and the team didn't, you know, re-up it. You know, I can't even remember. Like, Peyton Manning was a free agent, but that's just because, you know, he got cut and, you know, there were obviously strange circumstances there. But finding your quarterback in free agency, I mean, good luck. I mean, just look at this year's group. And, you know, finding your quarterback after the first round is tough, too. So, yeah, if I'm the Browns, if you're willing to offer 19 for Bradford, then hell, you better be willing to give it up for a shot to get Mariota.
Yeah. And ladies and gentlemen, what you just heard was Matthew Fairburn being scared completely about Bryce Petty, cramping his pants, and
I'm
talking all
Bryce
the way
Petty.
Through it. Yeah, okay.
I've
we
to
heard
Bryce
the
Petty
tone of your voice.
In, well, it's just me wondering, I wonder if Bryce Petty reads. You know, not all guys read, but...
What?
Not all guys read.
Are you making a claim that Bryce Petty is illiterate right now?
No, I'm sure... I did not say I wonder if Bryce Petty knows how to read. I'm fairly confident he does know how to read. Though Baylor didn't have a playbook for the first couple years he was there, so he could have gotten away with it if he didn't know how to read. But yeah, I mean, if the Bills draft Bryce Petty, bring him on. Whatever. I'll be like Prisco with my takes. I'm standing by him.
There you go. I actually, the worst question I asked at the combine was actually off to the side with Bryce Petty, and I just said, "So did you ever call a play at Baylor?" And he didn't seem very pleased that someone was asking that, and he said, "Yes, he did call a play at Baylor." Now he didn't say how many, so maybe it was just the one.
Yeah, maybe just the one. He said, yes, I called a single play at Baylor. Down in Mobile when I talked to him, there were, you know, some questions I asked him that he wasn't too big of a fan of, but that's okay. I mean, just doing my job. And, you know, EJ Manuel doesn't much care for me, so what's the difference?
That's right. Everybody can hate us. Just make sure to rate and subscribe to us on iTunes. That's all I ask.
As long as Bryce Petty clicks on my stories, he can hate on.
That's right. And you can find those stories at syracuse.com/bills. Anything else this week, Fairburn? I mean, we kind of burned through all of our topics. I mean, we could talk about Chris Borland a little bit, like every other NFL thing. Any Chris Borland take? I don't, other than to say that had to be really hard to do. All the people who are, like, talking junk about him being a wimp or whatever, and I'm cleaning that up very much, those people suck, I think. I don't know. I don't want to say good for him, because obviously it's probably not a good, fun situation, but I don't think this is going to be some tipping point about the NFL, I guess, is my hashtag hot take about the whole thing. I don't know. It sucks for the 49ers. I'm starting to feel bad for the 49ers, which I know their fans don't care about. They don't want my pity, but I don't know. It's one thing after the other for the 49ers.
Yeah, I'll go in reverse order of your takes. I don't feel bad for the 49ers at all.
Oh.
And mostly because most of the things that have happened to them, they've done to themselves. It all starts with running Harbaugh out of town and sort of, you know, goes from there. But, I don't know, the Borland thing's interesting. You mentioned you don't think it'll be a tipping point, and I would agree with that. But I do think it opened a lot of eyes, I think, and got people talking, players included, which is, you know, obviously... That doesn't make this the tipping point, but maybe the tipping point's coming. And, maybe a few more players will start to take notice in the same way Chris Borland did. And, you know, Borland was better than I expected last year. But, yeah, like you said, you don't want to say good for him because you don't really know. Maybe things aren't going well for him. But what I will say is, like you mentioned to start, is shame on anybody who, you know, thinks this is a coward move on Borland's part. It's anything but. And honestly, it's funny what it's turned into. I mean, I've seen hot takes ranging from somehow Aaron Hernandez got dragged into this.
Yeah, that was weird.
Which was just, I mean, I don't even know
how you get there. Like, I don't know how that clicks in someone's brain to think, okay, I need to fire out my story about Chris Borland. Okay, that's fine. You're on the right track. This is a sad situation. It's unfortunate. Okay, you're still good. Okay, now who do I compare him to? Aaron Hernandez. No, the house is on fire.
I clicked on it and I had to take my Mac to the store because it melted my Mac, that hot take did. But that was bizarre. I've seen some others that I don't even want to, you know, give the time of day. But to me, I mean, this is a personal decision Chris Borland made, you know, for his personal health. Took some courage. And honestly, there's more, believe it or not, there's more to life than football. And this guy would like to have, you know, that type of life instead of, you know, you just read some of the stories these days. It's scary stuff. It's changed the way I've watched football. You know, it used to be 5-10 years ago, you'd see a big hit and, you know, it'd be one of those plays in a game that gets you excited. This time you're just hoping the guy, you know, gets up. And I don't know, it's a interesting time in the NFL, and we'll see how, you know, there's been a lot of early retirements, and we'll see how this starts to affect people. You know, maybe this isn't a tipping point, but maybe we'll look back at this in 5 years and say, yeah, remember when all those guys were retiring, and, you know, maybe this will finally, you know, there'll be some change.
Yeah, perhaps. And, you know, on our show, we'll talk about them and see how they affect the NFL draft, because that's what we have a show for. We can talk to you all day and all night about the ethics and morals of things and why things should or shouldn't happen, but we'll always try and tie it to the draft, because that's what we're here doing on the Mocking the Draft podcast. And that's going to do it for this week's episode. I think we're getting close to episode 50 at this point, Fairburn. I'll have to go back and count them, maybe. Probably not.
Are we going to have a big party for that one?
Well, they're all parties, I think. I was under the impression that these were parties. I don't know. But we'll see. We might be close to 50. Maybe we'll try and do something fun.
Not to say we're not always 50.
We might have, quite frankly.
That'd be devastating.
You could be listening to episode 50 of the Mocking the Draft podcast right now. If you know what episode we're on, let us know. Rate and subscribe on iTunes. Maybe tell us there when you give us 5 stars, because that, of course, helps the show. Now, you can find all Fairburn stuff over at Syracuse.com/Bills. Make sure you're following him on Twitter at Matthew Fairburn. All my stuff, like I said before, you can be found at SBNation.com/NFL-draft. We have a rumor tracker up now that I'm going to try and update a few times every day leading up to the draft. That's good fun. We have the Bloggers Mock Draft coming back in a couple weeks. March 25th, I think, is the first day. We got the first 3 picks in for that already. One of them is already weird, so that should be fun. We'll have another mock draft next Monday, maybe 2 rounds. So if you like mock drafts, of course, that's...
Where better?
That's right. I don't know. Anything coming up that people need to know about from you, Fairburn?
I think I'm going to have a new mock draft soon. So I'll update the Bills needs, which have obviously changed quite a bit. And, I think a new mock draft is probably in order sooner rather than later on Syracuse.com. So stay tuned. Stay woke, if you will.
Well, I don't know about that, but maybe we'll get together and do another mock draft on the show. Maybe not next week, maybe the week after. No guarantees. Just keep tuning in and find out when we do it. So, for Matthew Fairburn, I'm Dan Kadar. Thank you very much for listening to the show, and we will talk to you next time.